Okay, hi everybody. And after a couple of days of not being able to do this, I'm back. And this is the 1st of July, the year 2020. Now, we're working from page 26, and we're beginning an interesting subject called C groups in the New Age, which we can also find if we if we look in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. There it discusses the 10 C groups, and here I think this is the some of the first material to come out about the C groups. It's a project of 275 years. And that takes the apparent termination of this project to the year 2200. So still, another 180 years ahead of us that far. Now, what I'm seeking to do here, I think. Yes. Right. Okay. Always have to have a bracket, you know? All right. In case something needs to be, marked down. So this takes us to July 1937. We've been dealing with 1934, 35 in this collection of essays, which ended up being called The Externalization of the Hierarchy. So DK getting in order here. DK tells us, earlier, I gave you some thoughts. I meant the new groups which come into functioning activity under the law of group progress. This law has a peculiarly close relation to the Aquarian Age. Interestingly, you might think it would be ruled by Aquarius. Maybe it has some connection, but the major rulership is Capricorn because it's also called the law of elevation. So let's see if I can. I gave you some thoughts anent. Let's just see where that takes us. It's going to take us into the probably, let's see, externalization of the hierarchy. And there it is, the externalization. And it says, earlier I gave you, and let's see what book that's in. Yes, Esoteric Psychology, page 174 to 179. So let's go back here and fill that in because we want to know where these new groups will be discussed. And that's here. And also, of course, around page 40, maybe give or take a little, of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. So, groups have always existed in the world, as for instance, the family group unit, but they have been predominantly third-ray groups with therefore a dominant outer expression and control, and originating as the result of desire. The focus has been outstandingly material, and that has been part of the intended plan. Right objectivity and expression has been the goal, and still is, of the evolutionary process. All right, third ray group. So we'll use the third ray color whenever I can find a color that's appropriate to what's been said. I try to do it, but there's not enough colors there for the highlighter. And to, at the same time, see through the colors. But the groups now forming are a second ray activity and are building groups. Building the forms of expression in the new age. All of these are going to develop into major streams of service. Some of them already exist as means of service, but they're going to be enhanced by the teaching, which leads into the New Age, and who knows what teaching will be given in the New Age itself. They are not the result of desire, you know, desire being stemming from the solar plexus chakra below the diaphragm, and therefore having to do with materiality. They are not the result of desire, as the term is usually understood, for they are founded basically on a mental principle. Remember that the causal body is really found on the higher plane of mind. They are subjective, in fact, and not objective in nature. Now, there are three words: objectivity, subtlety, subjectivity. And you maybe can imagine what they stand for. Objectivity. Let's see, let me do this correctly. So, objectivity, subtle, and subjectivity. Sometimes when we think of the astral plane, we think it is subjective. No, it's not. It's subtle. The lower mental plane is also not subjective. It is subtle. Then when we reach the higher mental plane, we can begin to talk about subjectivity, but from a higher point of view, it too is simply subtle. Anyway, they are founded on the mental impulse. They are subjective, in fact, and not objective in nature. It depends on how precisely he's using the word, but he does discriminate between that which is simply subtle and not seen, and yet is still a part of the form world, and that which is truly subjective or of the soul or beyond the soul. Anyway, these groups are subjective in fact and not objective in nature. They are distinguished by quality more than by form. Now, we do remember, don't we? Life, quality, and appearance. Those are the three distinguishing traits. And life relates to the core of the monad, quality to the soul world, and in a way includes the spiritual triad. And appearance relates to the personality. That they may eventually produce potent objective effects is to be desired. And such is their intent in our minds. But at the present stage, which is that of germination, so just sprouting, we might say. They are subjective and occultly speaking, they are working in the dark. So we would say maybe not easily detectable. I hope. Yeah, that's correct. At some distant date, groups will emerge which will be first-rate groups, animated by the will aspect, and consequently still more subjective in nature and more esoteric in origin. But with these, we need not concern ourselves. In other words, let us say that the etheric plane, whereon some of the ashrams are found, especially those that have a strongly first-ray basis, that etheric plane is more subjective than the Buddhic plane, and the Buddhic more subjective than the mental plane. These seed groups are embryonic and therefore like germinating seeds. Maybe when, you know, we were children, we had that science experiment where we put a lima bean with a moist blotter in a glass and watched the germination take place. So they're like germinating seeds, and their activity is at present dual. Every seed demonstrates its life by putting two outward evidences of its internal life and activity, and these seed groups are no different, are no exception to the universal law. Their activity is evidenced in a relation to the hierarchy and their relation to each other. Not yet have they succeeded in emerging into outer plane activity, although this is what DK was working on and experimenting with, but of course the material with which he was working, i.e. the people, the individuals, probably very much like ourselves, weren't quite up to his vision and his ideal. And then, of course, along came the war. Their inner life is just not adequately strong, but they are, as says the scripture, taking root downwards in order to bear fruit upwards. I guess we could even say the reverse of this, that the occult tree or the occult plants take root upward or are rooted in the higher worlds and bear their fruit in manifestation. So we just have to study both possibilities. And each one of us, you know, can well ask, as a result of my life, what fruit have I borne? How have I shared it? What good has it done? We don't want to be like the fig tree that I think it was probably the initiate Jesus that gave it a bit of a blast with that curse because it did not bear a good fruit. Okay, all of us are responsible for flowering or coming forth with some example of a usable, nourishing fruit. And the methods of nourishment are very different, of course. We're not just speaking about physical nourishment. Should these groups develop as intended, should the corporate life of the members persist in right integral relation, you know, this would go on after the individual members pass on, but the whole integrity of the group would persist. And should continuance be their keynote, Then the seed groups, tiny as they may be, will come to flower, and through the eventual scattering of the seed, succeed finally in covering the earth with verdure. Secondary groups, promising, you know, the nourishment to come and to be made available all over the world. As small as they may be now, and even as relatively insufficiently powerful. But they will emerge, and their fruits will be seen. And I think one can already see this to a degree in esoteric education, with the appearance of Madame Blavatsky and Alice Bailey. There have been many fruits made available to the mind seeking illumination. There have also been the fruits of healing, and maybe of clear seeing. I've gone backwards, groups 4, 3, 2. There have been the groups of telepathic impression, where we learn more about worlds that were completely hidden to us, as it were, in the dark. We still have a lot of improvement in the political field, which is desirable and has not yet shown itself as it should. Regarding the New World religion, yes, there have been fruits. Regarding science, as it breaks into the ethers, there have been fruits. And psychology has been a particularly fruitful field, where the not only the fourth force of transpersonal psychology has emerged, but the fifth force, which is both transpersonal and energy specific, if I may say. Much remains in the economic field. The sharing is not yet second nature. It occasionally happens. And finally, the great summary of the 10th seed group, that has to wait until the others develop. It will be more along the line of magic and creative manifestation. Okay, anyway, I am speaking here, he says, in the language of symbolism, which is, as you well know, the language of truth. Wow, what a fine statement that is. Usually we might think that, you know, symbolism is a veil, but in fact it's a source of revealing the truth and brings us to the possibility of detecting the truth on the Buddhic plane. One small plant, which in its turn succeeds in producing a seed through rightful fruition, because that's how the seeds arise, from the midst of the fruit, can thus reproduce itself in multiple orders. So this is the way the seeds are scattered all over the world to cover the earth with verdure. There are many places which are deserts, and Master Moria asks, whenever you encounter a desert, ask yourself what offense was committed to create it. A tiny seed is a potent force if duly tended, rightly nurtured, and ripened by sun and water within the soil. Its potencies are unpredictable. So be not, therefore, unduly impressed by the smallness of the effort. The power of the seed. Maybe we recall the writings of Dane Rudyard, a significant thinker in the field of astrology and occult philosophy, and he propagated the idea of seed men and women, of course. And though being an Aries, as he was, Aries is the sign of the seed and ideas, since Aries is the birthplace of ideas, can be considered to be seeds. And as they are scattered all over the earth, we can understand the meaning of nothing is more potent than an idea whose time has come. So there is a germination which can occur widely if all the associated forces promote the unfoldment of the idea. And given certain cycles, there come those times when an idea comes forth, its time having come. So let's see how he looks at this. Certain germ ideas are emerging into human consciousness. These differ peculiarly from those of the past, and it is these widely different ideas which are the distinctive characteristics of the New Age, the Aquarian Age. Hitherto, the great ideas which succeeded finally in controlling a race in any age have been the gift of the intuitive sons of men to their generation. The intuitives are higher than the advanced human beings. Advanced human beings have then seized upon the intuitive idea, subordinated it to the process of mentation. You know, they broke it down so it could be related to present conditions, made it desirable by stimulating the aspirational orientation, which would enliven it, and then have seen it come into being through the agency of recognition, as it is occultly called. So what we have here, this is the magical process. So, but there are going to be differences here which are very important. And coming into being is a question of manifestation. And that which emerges onto the physical plane can then be recognized by the many. Okay, let's see here. The seed idea, when manifested, can be, recognized by the many. Okay. Well, we have to understand this magical process. Any advancing son of God who is an initiate is also becoming a white magician and is engaged in the manifestation of the divine plan. One illumined mind would sense the divine idea needed for the growth of the racial consciousness and then would give it form. The few would recognize it and thus foster its growth. They would recognize that it is an idea whose time has come. The many would eventually desire it, and then it could manifest experimentally. The masters are always conducting experiments to see what will work, what will abide upon the physical plane, and could manifest experimentally and sporadically all over the civilized world of any age, wherever culture of any kind made itself felt. Thus the idea was manifested. This is how it used to be. And maybe, you know, to an extent it still is. I'm thinking about, you know, let's say Einstein's theory of relativity. Well, it was an idea whose time had come, but he was the illumined mind who touched that approach to reality we call relativity. And then the few who could understand it, you know, sometimes when you study it, it's difficult to have it appeal to the common sense. At least the implications of it are difficult. And then more and more people would desire to understand something of the relative world, something of the quantum world to which the theory of relativity led when further thought and research were extended in its direction. And there were outer examples, measurements, which proved it to be correct. So, you know, everybody wonders, how did he come up with the idea, you know, as if he were the source of it. But he was the medium, you might say, a high medium, being a Pisces person with Cancer rising, he had the two signs of mediumship very strongly in his horoscope. And along with that, you know, along with that Neptunian sensitivity, that imaginative sensitivity, he had a very interesting concrete approach of Saturn and Mercury conjuncted in the sign of Aries. So he speculated about the nature of form and the changes within form if relativity were true, and it turned out to be true. Of course, there were further disputes when quantum theory came into examination and vogue, and Einstein didn't go along with it. He said, God does not play dice with the universe, something like that. But I think the quantum point of view has been an extension of the theories of relativity, general and special theories, and have been pretty well proven also to be correct. Okay, two ways in which these determining ideas in the past came into being and played their part in leading the race might be mentioned. I'm sorry, having a little trouble putting words together here today. Two ways in which these determining ideas in the past came into being, into recognition, into noticeability, into consideration by the intelligent. And of course they get watered down, and you know, people who don't understand much about the real quantum physics are talking about quantum this and quantum that, you know, it becomes generalized and blurred and applied in a very general, not specific way. Anyway, they play their part in leading the race onward, and these might be mentioned. Okay. Two ways. Yeah. One, let's see, let's make this. Okay, one of these ways, right? One was through the teaching of some teacher who founded a school of thought, thus working through the minds of a chosen few, and through them eventually colored the thoughts of men at this time. I was thinking, well, what about Plato and Aristotle? And here it is, the very next sentence. Their respective academies, you know, and well, they had slave labor at the time in Greece. And the higher classes were free to think and to speculate. They were living upon the labor of others, but they did offer to the world a great penetration into the field of thought. We owe the Greeks so much in that respect for the development of rationality, or at least the modern development of it. So, two ways in which the ideas that were leading the race forward came into being, or came into some kind of position where they could be recognized and evaluated and assimilated, you know. One was through the teaching of some teacher who founded a school of thought, thus working through the minds of a chosen few. And in the dialogues of Plato, we see the chosen few asking questions of Socrates, generally. Of such a teacher, Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, and many others are outstanding examples. Now we notice, at least here, that these three teachers are distinguished. We always distinguish Plato and Aristotle, but sometimes we wonder whether Socrates really existed, but he did. And sometimes we wonder, what is the relationship between Plato and Socrates? And is DK at all involved in this triplicity of great thinkers and teachers? Anyway, of such a teacher, Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, and many others are outstanding examples. Okay. So I'll use the Mercurian color here, which is yellow. Okay. Another method was the evolution of the desire of the masses for that which is deemed desirable, and their mass reorientation towards a fuller life expression. The masses will rise. We've all been at some point part of the masses, and there is the inner spirit within us, which always, unknown to the personality, presses us forward, at least at first unknown what is it that drives us really? And you know, we have to say that it is our monadic nature, the spirit within. This life expression founded on some voiced idea was embodied in an ideal life. So this is the quest for the ideal by the masses. The quest for the ideal by the masses. Thus, the work of the saviors of the world came into expression, responding, you know, to the articulated or inchoate demand of the masses, and this brought about the emergence of a world religion. So the first method is that of the thinkers and is philosophy. The second method involves aspiration for the ideal and suggests and brings forth the religions of the world. Each major religion is advancing the possibility of touching reality just a little bit. If someone comes forward, as one of the great teachers did, and brings the idea of immortality or the survival of the body forward after it had been forgotten, then that's an advancement. If we bring forward the idea of a eternal evolution and a continuity of revelation on, that's an advancement. If we bring forward a system of initiation where higher and higher categories of participation in reality become possible, that's an advancement. So every new teacher is coming forth with something that adds to man's general appreciation of reality. I mean, the Buddha is bringing the light of wisdom, and the Christ is bringing the great love and service aspect forward. And I guess analogy demands that a teacher will appear at some point when humanity is ready and has evoked that teacher through invocation, who will teach humanity the nature of will and how to accept that will and live according to that will in a selfless manner. So we've gone forth from a condition of complete universal adequacy into the world of emanation, and we've forgotten our origin, our source. And then we begin the climb through successive points of tension, and there are greater lights along the way who illuminate the path towards the next higher possible point of tension. And so, you know, we have to ask ourselves, at what point of tension do I live? Any one of us. Because a point of tension is revelatory. The higher the point of tension, the greater the revelation of things that were so refined, so subtle, so subjective that they just were not seen. We hear about the black light of Shambhala, Well, it's light, but it's so intense that to us it appears as blackness. But there will be a point of tension in which the great rivers and streams of force which constitute Shambhala will be revealed. I mean, the sufficiency of the point of tension will reveal them, and we will be deflecting the lesser avenues of conscious preoccupation. We have to extract or detach our consciousness from certain areas of preoccupation or certain lower points of tension in order to appreciate the true nature of a higher point of tension and participate in it. Okay, so he goes on. The first method was strictly mental, and even today remains so. The masses, for instance, know little of Plato and his theories, in spite of the fact that he has molded human minds either through acquiescence in his theories or through refutation of them down the ages. Well, maybe, you know, the Aristotelians, you know, let's say that maybe Aristotle was the third ray soul and Plato says the Tibetan was the second ray soul. So there's always going to be a battle between those two, at least at the present time, regarding how to approach truth and what can be considered to be truth. What I think I've discovered is that the second ray approach allows the leap of faith, whereas the third ray approach insists upon this concatenation of logical steps and consequences, building logically from one point to another and not having to leap into the sort of void and unsubstantiated belief, at least as the third ray conceives it. I mean, if you compare the third ray to the sixth ray and the second ray, well, the second ray is bringing in a lot of intuition. That doesn't mean the sixth ray is devoid of it. But these third ray types think that what is accepted by the sixth and second ray types is not verifiable, not legitimate, not capable of proof, you know. And even in mathematics, we demand that a theorem, a statement regarding truth, be proven. And the second right type might say, well, it's just evident to the intuition. No proof may be needed. Now, of course, I'm thinking about Einstein here, and he had a tremendous third ray, but also a great intuition. And they asked him, you know, well, when Eddington, a very fifth ray type, went out to see whether he conducted an expedition to see whether light would bend. He said, was it the light of Mercury? The light would bend around the sun. Einstein was asked, well, what if Eddington runs into clouds, which I think he did in one place? What if what you predict does not happen? He says, well, it wouldn't make any difference. I know it's true. You know, the intuition is terribly persuasive when it's operating at that high level. special types of esoteric knowledge are coming through, but that is not really, as we learn in the beginning of the Glamour Book, the complete nature of intuition. It's more the sense of universality, but within that more universal grasp comes the appearance of what we might call esoteric or occult truth. Every ray type can be intuitive because every ray type has eventually access to the Buddhic plane, some sooner and some later. So the first approach here is mental, strictly mental. And two ways in which the determining ideas in the past came into being. So the philosophical, mathematical, mental method is one of them. And, you know, what does it take to lead the race onward? Well, generally, greater sensitivity, steady increase in sensitivity to subtle impression, subtle vibration. So he says the first stage, okay, strictly mental. And maybe students of DK have a tendency not to be strictly mental, but to certainly exercise the mind considerably, just as he does. The other method is strictly emotional. Notice the word strictly. At least it begins that way, you know. Now, one day, science or knowledge and emotion or idealism and religion will be amalgamated, will be brought together in a mutually clarifying, enhancing relationship. It already happens for some. So the other method is strictly emotional, and so more easily colors the mass consciousness. You know, in our second ray solar system and on our planet, whose soul ray is the second, and especially for those people individualized on our fourth, within our fourth chain and on our fourth globe that we call the Earth. So anyway, the other method, emotional, and colors the mass consciousness. An instance of this was the message of the love of God, which Christ enunciated, and the emotional reaction of the masses to his life, his message, and his sacrifice. Thus, the need, okay, so this is the other method of advancing humanity. One is more of the mind, has to do with the moon chain, has to do with the previous solar system or the conditioning that occurred on the moon chain and for some lotuses in the previous solar system. Thus, the need of the mental few, much fewer on our planet at this time than the mass approach, thus the need of the mental few and the emotional many has been met down the ages. Sometimes DK talks about the bulk of humanity, and you know, they would be taking the path eventually as 6th degree initiates one fine day, taking the path to Sirius. But the monastic types would not go that way, because on Sirius, in its related system, the stars, either hidden or manifest in its related system, Manus is taught, probably because there is a 5th ray soul in connection with the great star Sirius, or the logos of Sirius. So the bulk may be, you know, one would have to hazard a guess, and my guess has been around 80 or 85%. And then the mental few, cultivated either on the moon chain or within the previous solar system or both, or having come in from another planet like Mercury, where mentation would be strongly cultivated, they would be the remaining percentage. In every case, says the Tibetan, the origin of the work effected and the medium whereby the race has been guided has been a human divine consciousness, you know, like the Christ or any really high initiate. The medium has been a personality who knew and felt and was at one with the world of ideas, with the inner world order, and with God's plan. So we're talking about the high consciousness and its instrument in every case where advancement has been where advancement has been possible. So the result of these two tendencies of activity has been the emanation of a stream of force coming from some layer or level of the world consciousness, the mental or the emotional planes, which are aspects of the consciousness of the manifesting deity. This impact of force has evoked a response from those who function upon one or other of these levels of awareness. From a particular layer, and the layer, you know, which attunes with the emotions is the Buddhic layer, and the Christ was a great example of that. And the layer which attunes with the mind is the higher mental layer, or perhaps even the atmic layer, since Atma is a third cosmic subplane, or Atma develops upon the third cosmic subplane, and the number three will bring in mentation. So the impact of force has evoked a response from those who function on one or other of these levels of consciousness. Today, as the integration of the human family proceeds, and as the mental level of contact becomes more potent, there is to be found a powerful human reaction to schools of thought and a lessened reaction to the methods of orthodox religion. Well, yes, there is a gradual elevation of intelligence on our planet. Certainly as the planetary logos progresses in its own initiatory regime. Now, in the human being, the second initiation will see a strong activation of the throat center. They all somehow activate the heart. And the first initiation brings sacral to throat, but there's a new method at the second initiation for the throat center to express mental illumination and sort of a spiritual mind, how did he put it? Spiritual intelligence. Okay. So intelligence is increasing now in humanity. Humanity is moving towards the first initiation, which will bring the higher mind more and more into play. And second degree initiates, or those who are aspiring to that degree, will be building the Antikarana and will have some contact with the abstract mind. It's still higher than the higher mind, and certainly higher than the concrete mind. When I see higher, say higher, I mean existing at a more revelatory point of tension. So religion, in the Orthodox sense at least, is being subdued. There are a lot of people hanging on desperately to the old faith and the old approach to religion through faith, you know, the community of faith. Well, we have to build on faith and enter into the possibility of true knowledge. So the subduing of the Orthodox religion, DK says, this is due to the fact that the trend of human consciousness is, if I might so express it, away from the emotional, you know, more the Atlantean approach, away from the emotional to the mental levels of consciousness. And this, as far as the masses are concerned, will go on increasing. So the masses, you know, who are they? The masses are largely those who have been individualized, individualized in this fourth chain and fourth lobe. When moonchain humanity is more intelligent in the way of mind, maybe not more intelligent in the way of the heart, and was individualized on the moon chain, and maybe still older, those who were individualized in the previous solar system. The time has now come when there are enough people to be found who, having themselves made the religious and the mental approaches to truth definite factors in their consciousness in some small measure, and having established enough soul contact so that they can begin to touch the world of ideas upon the intuitional levels of consciousness. Now, there is associated with the soul the factor of intuition, but it is a reflection of the Buddhic plane and not the Buddhic plane itself. The infusion of Buddhi into the soul accompanies increased registration of that which the intuition provides, and that registration occurs within the personality. So these people can employ a new technique. You know, in Atlantis, a long time elapsed, millions of years, when the Atlantean consciousness and the form associated were the sources of preoccupation, and the Aryan consciousness, the mental consciousness, existed only in the few. But now, the world of ideas and of at least reflected intuition can be touched, and maybe A new technique can be employed. You know, we're on the cutting edge here, and we're seeking what will really advance humanity. If not travels to outer space, you know, or colonization of Mars or the moon or something like that, but a great inner journey of revelation. Together and as a group, they can become sensitive to the incoming new ideas, which it is intended should condition the new age that is upon us. Together and as a group, they can establish the ideals and develop the techniques and methods of the new schools of thought, which will determine the new culture. This is, you know, the story of what is possible to us in group form during the Aquarian Age. Together and as a group, that's a mantric repetition, you know, which every good teacher finds occasion to use. Together and as a group, they can bring these ideas and ideals into the consciousness of the masses so that schools of thought and world religions can be blended into one and the new civilization can emerge. All this we look forward to being able to do in group formation. So this is a frontier, a real frontier for humanity, not simply fleeing the earth because it's doomed and colonizing well, Mars or the moon, really, which would be even symbolically a retrogression, whatever brilliant technology it took to get the physical body of man there. So this new civilization can emerge if we respond to, increasingly to the soul nature, which during the age of Aquarius, we can and will and must, really. Sensitivity, let's just take a look here. Increasing sensitivity. Greater idealism. Techniques of which we probably have no idea yet. And finally, consciousness, you know, presenting that which has been impressed from higher levels upon the consciousness of the masses. Now, he tells us that the third ray works that way. The third ray works with those who, for whom the intuition, you know, largely, at least it works this way, for whom the intuition is not working, not yet. And those for whom the intuition is working can impress certain third ray types who can then render the intuition reasonable, logical, and can spread it widely among the masses. So the new civilization can emerge. And that's what we're looking for. We are together building a new civilization. It's a huge task, but it has to do with always bringing in through the magical process certain ideas. which will move the whole race onward. It will be the product of the mental and emotional fusion of the techniques of the Piscean Age, and it will thus produce an eventual manifestation of the physical, upon the physical plane, of the plan of God for the immediate future. This is the vision which lies behind the experiment being carried on in the new seed groups. Well, the masters are always tentative about their efforts and so frequently call them precisely by the name of experiment. So, we have had the mental approach because Virgo, the sign opposite Pisces, is an extremely mental sign from the exoteric perspective and with the exoteric use of Mercury. And then, of course, the emotional approach is very suited to the Piscean Age with its sixth ray nature. In other words, the not only does the sixth ray come through Pisces along with the second, but in another cycle of maybe some 2,500 years, the sixth ray has accompanied the equinoctial age of Pisces. Okay, well, we're, you know, getting into this whole seed group, interesting thing, and this is all about the seed groups. This is the vision which lies behind the experiment being carried on regarding these seed groups. Yeah. So we are interested in the new civilization. We're interested in advancing humanity so that it can exemplify a new civilization. We're interested in the ideas which propel a new civilization. And in this C group work, some of these ideas have been brought forward in a quite irresistible manner. So we've made it to page 30, and I'll go back here now to page 26 where we began, and we'll take up a continuation, another point of view. Okay. But this will be a program of a little more than an hour, maybe an hour and 10 minutes, something like that. I've had to kind of give up making these things precise. So this is number 07A, and we're coming in on the 1st of July, and we're going from page 26 to 30. And we'll continue with program number 8. And hopefully it will be on the 1st of July. You know, in other words, that I'll be able to continue now, and we'll work from page 30 onward. Well, this whole introduction to the seed group process is very interesting. I think in three places, around page 40 or so of Dinah 1, and then he gave us the section that dealt with it in esoteric psychology for about 20 pages, and then this material found in the externalization of the hierarchy. So we're learning, and hopefully we're becoming more and more inspired by what Master DK wrote, and more effective in our service to our fellow human beings. So lots of love, many blessings. We'll see you soon as we go on. We really only have now another 30 pages in this book, and then our commentary will be complete. Well, never complete, but at least this attempt would have reached its conclusion. Maybe we can put it that way. So I'll come back with program 08A and see you then. Bye-bye.